B-Pod Studios.
They're Boston's number one afternoon show.
The most powerful sports radio show in New England.
America's number one afternoon sports show.
Yeah, but we're the biggest.
And number one in your heart.
And I just came here to help your ratings.
Sorry, John. Thank you. Don't need it.
Felger and Mass, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
All right, let's get to the Bees. They open up tonight here on 98.5, The Sports Hub in New Jersey. Mass, you think they're good enough to win a cup this year?
No.
What do you think their direction is?
I think that they are trying to angle towards the next wave. And when I say the next wave, I'm talking about turning the team over to the next wave of leadership. McAvoy, some of the young guys on defense, integrating Studnicka. Dare I say that in some ways, I think it's a bridge year for them. Now, does that mean that they suck? No, they don't suck. They still have a lot of good players. I don't think they're quite, they're not cup quality. They should be a playoff team, though. And I think that the early part of this season could be really bumpy. So look at the games last night. There were five games in the league. The winning teams averaged five goals. Okay, to me, it felt like there was some scoring in these games. And I think that without a preseason and with a young defense corps, Utuka better be good or they could be giving up four or five goals a night.
You got a thought, Murray?
Yeah, I don't think they're winning a championship. I think that window slammed shut game seven against the Blues. Now that you've peeled off two important pieces in the defense, I think it is going to be bumpy, like Maz said, that there's no preseason. Some of these games are going to be like, I don't know if you watched that first one. I caught the last couple of periods of it. Penguins, Flyers. Like, you're going to see 5-6 goal games here for the first few weeks of this season. It's going to be sloppy, and you're going to see high-scoring games.
Okay. I don't think they're cup-worthy either. And if they're, on Truth Serum, they probably believe the same thing. So then the second question becomes, what's their direction, and did they do enough to get to that next wave quickly enough? In other words, shouldn't they have done more to get younger and start the cycle? Because it feels like they've held on to too many of their older players. Now, they've made the decision on Chara, obviously, but Krejci's still here. Rask is still here, and those are really the two big ones that I look at. Are they just treading water? And is that something to criticize them for? Cam Neely said something when he spoke to the media in the offseason. I think this was after the cup was awarded, after Tampa won the cup. Neely talked to the media for something. I don't even know what. Draft? I don't even know.
It was September 10th, and it was just an offseason video media call.
So there it is. And Cam Neely said the following about his team. Let's hear it, Jimmy.
You know, we've got some guys that have played a lot of good hockey for us, a lot of years for us, that their careers are somewhat winding down, and we have to really take a hard look at where we're at as an organization. You know, can we compete again for the Stanley Cup? And if we can, what do we have to do to our roster to do that? So we have to really be honest with ourselves and assessing our team and assessing our players in the organization and see where we're going to, where we think we really are going to be. I mean, if we have to be as honest and as brutally honest as possible about where we think we're going to be in the next couple of years, and we have to react accordingly to that.
Okay, when he said that, I think we all read that as, whoa, here comes a rebuild. They know it's not good enough. They know they just missed it. They're old. They got to get young because we're not going anywhere in the short term, and here it comes. And looking back on that, I don't think Neely quite lived up to it, unless they took a really brutally honest look at their own roster and said, no, we can win a cup with this. And now we can agree or disagree. But when Neely first said that, I was like, okay, here comes some changes. Finally, they're going to flush some things out, make some hockey trades, really, really address this roster. And it turns out the only player they really did that to was Chara. They made a hard decision on Chara. There were a lot of reasons to keep him. Reputation, what he's meant to the organization, all those things. It costs no money. He's your captain. All those things. So it turned out that they were just brutally honest, as Cam Neely said, with one player. Turns out they took a hard look at only one player, Zdeno Chara. Meanwhile, the rest is back. And I'm curious. Did they just get gun shy? Did they say to themselves, we can't take this big of a step back? It's bad for, not that they're selling tickets, but it's bad for business, and we're just not going into a full rebuild. Or did they look at it and say, no, we are actually good enough? In which case, are they delusional? And I would just say, in their defense, they did win the President's Trophy last year. And not that I give a crap about that, okay? And I think that trophy stinks. It stinks when you don't win a cup. That you had the best regular season but don't win the cup or lose in the second round. It makes you look like a loser.
That thing's a curse.
It's the most useless trophy in sports. Yeah. It really is.
However, they were the best team in hockey for the regular season. Is it asking too much to ask a team to blow up a roster that just had the best record in hockey? So, to be fair to the Bruins, I don't think there are many teams out there, Maz. I doubt there are many examples of teams that won the President's Trophy the year before and then came back the next year and said, we're going to peel off four or five of our best pieces.
Sure.
Like, that just doesn't happen. And maybe they should, but it's just sort of asking a lot for a team to go to Game 7 of the Cup Finals, then win the President's Trophy, and say, we're not good enough, we're blowing it up. Like, I think that's asking too much. And so that's in their defense, but when Cam Neely said that, I think we were all like, oh, they're really going to look at it here. They're really going to look at it. And it turns out they didn't. It turns out they only looked at it with one player, and that was Zdeno Chara. How do you feel about that decision, Maz?
Okay, so look, the Chara decision to me, I told you, I'm in favor of getting rid of Chara because I want the keys handed to McAvoy. I want the whole thing. And when I say the keys, I'm talking about the leadership of the defense corps. McAvoy's your number one guy. Everybody plays off of and around McAvoy. That wasn't going to happen as long as Chara was here, so I like that. With regard to the rest of the roster, I would have liked to have seen one more move, if not two, but at least one, those being Krejci and Rask. Okay, now again, I'm not as down on Rask as you guys are, because I think Rask overall is a good goalie. But if it's only going to be for one more year, what are we doing here? I'd have gone out, and you brought up a great one, go out and sign... was it Holpe who signed for 2 years and $8
million? Holpe. Mm-hmm. Holpe, $4 million a year.
Okay, you save $3 million bucks, you get yourself a good goalie, and you cut bait with Tuukka. That would have worked for me. I'd have been totally okay with that. My only question is this, because I think it's fair to look at them and say they didn't do enough. Even though they won the President's Trophy, they're sort of straddling a line now. And my only question is this, did they try and they couldn't move those guys? Did Rask block a trade? Did nobody want Krejci at $7 million? And the good news, if you want to buy into that, is that both of those guys are up at the end of the year. So if you suck, now if they're motivated to be in contract years, and Krejci is really good, and Rask is really good, and McAvoy takes a jump, and that's a lot of ifs. Okay, let's see what happens. I mean, maybe they could be better than we think. In which case, you benefit from having pending free agents on your roster. But if it goes the other way, and maybe you brought this up, and I thought this was a great point. Krejci would be a great pickup at the deadline.
Good rental.
Krejci would be a great pickup at the deadline for somebody if you're out of it. And so, maybe they got a little bit of leverage here at the deadline if it goes that way. But they're in between a little bit. There's no two ways about it.
Well, so I don't think they followed through on Neely's comment there in September. That's what I think. I think they maybe he was just talking about Chara, because it feels like that's the only guy that they took a hard look at, to use Neely's word. We have to take a hard look at ourselves. We have to be honest with ourselves, brutally honest. And I think they only did that with one guy, Chara. And I think that follows through on that comment. Chara's not good enough. He's not good enough to make a difference between you and the elite teams in the league. And he's not getting better. And there are reasons to do it. And so that was a tough decision. They've gotten criticized for it, and people are, wondering what the hell they're doing with that. And that was a hard decision that was consistent with what Neely said. I don't think they went far enough. I don't think they went far enough. But the Chara thing sort of hangs over the team. Bruce Cassidy was on with Tutcher and Rich yesterday. We're going to play a lot of sound from that because Cassidy gave you some good stuff. Called it on a nice landline. Sounded good, too. So here's Cassidy on why they let Chara go.
Part of it was we have some kids on defense that kind of getting to the point where they've, played 2-3 years in the minors, a little bit up here. So, we wanted to see what they could offer to us. And we've been talking about that for a while. We did that with a lot of young guys. So that's the first part of it. So who does that affect? And then obviously Z was up. Torrey's contract was up. So there had to be some decisions there. Both players, were wanted back here. But under what parameters was it going to be? So in Z's case, just a little bit of we told them flat out, we were honest, we have to look at these guys, so it's going to affect your minutes, where you play in the lineup, and et cetera. But at the end of the day, obviously, we're going to play the best lineup. But we had to be true to ourselves when we said that and look at guys. And he was perfectly okay with that and felt he had a better opportunity to play more in another team. Turned out to be Washington. So that was it in a nutshell. I mean, listen, the guy was great for us. He's a Hall of Famer, and he bled Bruins blood. So we're going to miss him. But, right now we got to sort of coach the guys we have, and we have to do a good job with them because, they need to come through for us, and that's the evaluation we thought would make us, a good hockey team. So let's get at it tomorrow night and find out.
Okay, so he's basically simple as ice time. It's ice time. They couldn't promise Chara the ice time that he wanted. Is that a reason to lose a guy like Zdeno Chara? And my answer is, yeah. Yep, it is. And when I look at the lineup, I think the lineup tonight, Murray, I don't know, have any of the Bruins reporters sent out the line combinations? I believe Lozon is playing with McAvoy on the first pair.
Correct.
And Zboril's on the third pair.
With Kevin Miller, yeah.
Right.
Okay, so good. That makes me feel good. Now here, I feel this like is a consistent thing. We take a hard look at it. We're going to be honest with ourselves. We looked at it with Chara. The arrow's pointing down. We want some ice time for some young guys. We're going to let them go. And now opening night, Lozon and Zboril are both in the lineup on the left side. Got it. Okay. If they had played John Moore tonight, Maz, or, playing these older guys, you could say Kevin Miller is one of them, but he's on the right side. It's different. We're talking about the left side guys. If they had put John Moore out there or, another of their veterans, then you'd sit there and say, well, what the hell are you doing? If you're going to play John Moore or one of those older players, you keep Zdeno Chara. So at least the young guys are in there and they're going to do this thing. That's fine.
Yeah, based on yesterday's workout, like at least they're consistent.
Okay, so good. Let's see. And I don't mind the Chara decision. I wouldn't have minded if they had kept him because he's so cheap and I like the guy so much. But if you're going to let Chara go because you have these guys that you want to give minutes to, all right, at least give them minutes. So they're doing that. I think they could have done it in more than that place, though. And I don't think they went all the way with it. And let me just tell you, people have asked, and I'll just leave it with this before we get to the calls. People have asked, how do the Bruins get better without Zdeno Chara? How do they get better, Maz, without Zdeno Chara and Torey Krug? And here's my answer. I'll answer it with a question. What's been one of the biggest flaws on the Bruins the last couple of years?
I would say scoring depth.
Okay, that's obviously one. Another one.
Giving up 5-on-5 goals?
Yeah.
Bingo.
Yeah, D in front of the net, yeah.
No, 5-on-5.
Yeah.
Well, what were they so great at when they won the Cup in 11?
They were the best 5-on-5 team in the league.
Best 5-on-5 team in hockey. The last couple of years, they've kind of sucked 5-on-5. And right. They've been relying on their power play. And they relied on special teams. So how do they get better without Krug and Chara? Well, Krug was a much better power play guy than he was a 5-on-5 guy.
Totally.
And Chara was a much better penalty killer than he was a 5-on-5 guy. So
they're gonna
lose out on the power play. They're going to lose out on the PK. But Lozon, Zboril, who knows? They might be a better 5-on-5 team, which they needed to be. They needed to become a better 5-on-5 team. So that's the path for them to be better without Zdeno Chara and Torey Krug. We'll see how that plays out, but there's my answer to that. Let's start to get into the Bruins and some hockey stuff with your calls at 617-779-0985.
Sports. Boston's home for sports. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Doing what they do best.
Now talk about soap opera.
Wilder Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Well, he was told that we would look at these guys who may not be in the lineup some nights. It might be as far as that, where he wasn't in the lineup. Some back-to-backs early on. Here's the problem we ran into with this pandemic year and why it might have played out a little longer is that there's no exhibition games. We don't have an opportunity to judge these guys in 6 or 8 exhibition games to give you a little bit of a feel. We have none. We have, you know, 7-8 days of camp where we're trying to build in system, you know, a few new things. Not a lot. We haven't changed a lot, don't get me wrong, but, you know, building some chemistry with partners on the back end. So we just felt it would be unfair to say, oh, guy had a bad week of practice, he can't play in the National Hockey League. That's not fair to a kid that's kind of, you know, tutored down in Providence and here for 2-3 years. So that was the conversation. He, you know, it could be as much as he would be out of the lineup, but he may drop down and not be McAvoy's partner and play 23 minutes in all the matchup roles. It could vary. It honestly depend on how does he play first and foremost, and how do these young guys adapt to playing every night and playing against good players. And that is a little bit, I mean, we can sort of, you know, history tends to predict the future, so these younger guys we thought have progressed well, but we don't know. I mean, until they play, you know, you're just not sure. But we felt that they were very close, so that's the route we decided to take.
Okay, we'll start to find out. Lozon on the first pair tonight. Zboril on the third pair. It's a guy that I'm looking at. That's a face-saving guy for Sweeney. You know, that 2015 draft is going to... It hangs like an albatross over their necks. That was one of the deepest NHL drafts in recent memory. There were tons of good players right around where the Bruins drafted. That's the year they drafted 3 straight first-round picks, 15 or 14, 15, 16, 13, 14, 15.
13, 14, 15, yeah.
3 picks right in the middle of the first round. And you had guys like Matt Barzal with the Islanders, Shabbat's a defenseman in Ottawa. Who's the guy that won the
Connor?
Kobe? Kyle Connor. Kyle Connor, I think he's in Winnipeg. Sebastian Aho went a little bit after that. I mean, there was just talent all over that first round. There was talent all over where the Bruins were picking. And they ended up with DeBrusque, Zboril, and Senyshyn, who just was waived.
Correct.
Senyshyn was just waived, and what's even worse is he cleared waivers.
Yeah.
So I think he's backed on your taxi squad or something. But not only did Senyshyn, who was your real reach in there, you passed on Barzal for Senyshyn. Not only can he not make your team 5 years later, he can't make the league. No one in the league wants him.
Nobody wants him. It's almost like the Patriots with N'Keal Harry in that 2019 draft of wide receivers. It takes real effort to miss.
You know what? The word around the league at that time was that they whiffed badly on that draft, and the critics were right.
So, you know, not only is Senyshyn not a Bruin, he may not even be an NHL player. So that one hangs over their head, and until they win cups like that, he'll never live it down. And I'm sure they know it. Like, I'm not sure they're fighting anyone on that. Like, we screwed the pooch on this one, boys. But Zboril, there's a chance there. You know, if DeBrusque is a decent player, I'd rather have Barzal. I'd rather have all those guys I just mentioned than Jake DeBrusque. But at least that's not a complete whiff. And if Zboril turns into an NHL player, you've salvaged something. And Lozon is a second-round pick. And so, like, you can sort of save face around those 3 first-rounders, but, boy, what a whiff that was. So, anyway, to your calls, your thoughts, mixing in with our Celtics stuff. Here's Sean in Dorchester. Hi, Sean.
Hey, just want to make a point on the Bruins and the construction of the roster and the guys they've kept around. We always talk about the Celtics hoarding their young assets, but the Bruins kind of did it, too. And one trade that always comes to mind, and I think it really could have changed the complexion of the team, is maybe if they ponied up for a guy like Mark Stone, you wonder what, you know, that Stanley Cup playoff maybe looks like if Mark Stone's on your second line as opposed to DeBrusque. And really just not taking it. And I know they went out, they got Rick Nash, they traded first-round picks. But, you know, really ponying up for a guy who will be here for a longer period of time. They did it with Coyle, but you would have liked to see them do that more often and get another mainstay on the roster.
Well, I mean, just your original point. The Celtics hoard their young players. The Bruins hoard their old players. Now, I mentioned this earlier. I don't think people fully appreciate how long these guys have been here. I mean, and it is staggering. I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but for example, this is David Krejci's 15th season. Okay? This is Tuukka Rask's, I think, 13th season. I believe it is Patrice Bergeron. Patrice Bergeron, I think, is it 04, 05 that he started? This makes Patrice Bergeron, I think, his 17th or 18th year.
I think that's right, yeah.
Brad Marchand, his rookie year was the cup year. So even Brad Marchand, this is his 12th
yeah.
season?
11th? Yeah. That one blew me away.
I mean, 11 years, 17 years, 13 years, 15 years. I mean, that is, to keep a core together 7-8 years is like, that's a run that when you have them for a decade, like that's, these guys are blowing into the middle of their second decade. It's like, holy crap, Danny Ainge loves those middling first-round picks in the main Red Claws. Don Sweeney and the Bruins love these freaking old geezers who and they're good. Like, I don't want to trade Patrice Bergeron, and like but holy moly, do you understand how long they've kept this group together?
Oh, totally. Look, and again, you used to include Chara on that list. He was here for 14 years, wasn't it? Was it 14?
Yeah.
I mean, so now, thankfully, they've shaken it up a little bit. But this is sort of what you know, again, why they're straddling. They still got a lot of those guys, and now they're trying to introduce the young ones. It's a tough spot. I think that's, you know, to me, it's all about that first defense pair. Yeah, because that's what you're looking to build now. You need that first defense pair. So it's McAvoy, Lozon. Like, that's the one to me that's the key to the whole thing. Because that's going to be the core of your defense now for, in theory, the next, call it, 8 to 10 years.
Bob's in Bill Ricka. He's on line 3. Jimmy, I'm all jammed up, of course. Hi, Bob. You're up next with Felger and Maz.
Fellas, you're hitting the nail on the head here. I call Don Sweeney the TD Garden bellboy because all he does is open and close the door. He doesn't bring any new talent in. He could have brought in Bogosian. He could have brought in Shattenkirk, or at least kicked the tires on those guys. Now we got Zaboral and Lozon playing big minutes.
Well, so I don't know.
I don't feel great about it.
Okay, I mean, and time will tell. Maybe those guys suck and they can't play. It's true. I don't mind them giving those guys the chance. I mean, because you're much better off drafting and developing and having those guys up through your system than you are signing free agents. So, like, we all know that. And we'll see whether they've overrated these young players or not. Look, I mean, it'll be an easy second guess. It's great to sit here. If Lozon sucks and Zaboral can't play and Vakanainen isn't ready and, you know, we get 2 weeks into the year and the Bruins are outside of the top four, the playoff teams, and John Moore has to play. And old guy, is Steve Kampfer still here? I don't know. Like, if these old guys have to start playing and, you know, you've already bailed on the kids, we'll sit there and go, what were you doing getting rid of Zanichar? He wasn't even asking for any money. It's stupid. Like, it's an easy second guess, which is why it was a tough decision. And, in one respect, applaud him for it. I just think, you know, that's the only tough decision they've made on their roster in a long time. That's the only tough call they've made on their roster in a long, long time. The rest of these, relatively easy. I would still say passing on Torrey Krug was a relatively easy decision. I'm not paying a power play specialist that kind of money. You got to play 5-on-5. You got to be in the postseason. You ain't get that kind of money. You got to be that postseason guy that plays 30 minutes in all situations and is out there leading the charge. You know, I'm not giving you that money when you're just a power play guy. I don't blame the Bruins for that one. And I think the decisions they've made have been, you know, they didn't overpay for Nola Chari, who actually played well in Florida. They didn't overpay for, you know, some of these sub pieces. Those have been relative. Char was the first hard one. And good. You know, I think they can start making a few others here on this team. Ryan's in Bill Ricka. Hi, Ryan. Go ahead, please.
Yes. Can one of you explain to me how a guy like Zach Senyshyn and all these guys can't beat out Nick freaking Ritchie for a spot on the third line?
Oh, that's a good one. Nick Ritchie in the starting lineup tonight, third line next to Charlie Coyle.
You're right. Explain. He's with Coyle and Smith. Yeah. So, look, if fully healthy, I actually think their forward group has a chance to be pretty good.
Yeah.
Right? Because you put Pasternak on the first line, Stadnika probably goes to the third line, and Ritchie gets bumped out.
We're talking about Nick Ritchie.
Yeah. No, I have no idea. I can't help you on that one. I told you during the off season, I thought that Ritchie had been released. It turns out it was Brett Ritchie. It wasn't Nick Ritchie.
No, the brother's still here, and yeah. I don't know why.
I mean, as far as I'm concerned, you can dump all the Ritchies. Get rid of them all. I'm fine with that. I'm no Nick Ritchie fan. No, you're not going to get me to bite on that one.
But I'm with you on the forward group. The forward group, I mean, I wouldn't say it's like, you know, cup elite, that kind of thing, but it's pretty good.
It is pretty good.
It's pretty good. And this Andre Cache, let's see. You know, he does everything but score. He does everything but put it, you know, and you say that, you know, Charlie Coyle has those stretches too, where Charlie Coyle is up and down the ice. Puck is totally on his stick. He can't, no one can bring him down. No one can take away the puck. They hold the puck for a minute and 15 seconds in the opponent's zone and nothing happens. Like that's, that happens with Charlie Coyle. So they've got some guys here that'll wow you with possession and doing a lot of things except actually put the puck in the net.
No, it's so true. How do you like Kasha? No, I like his game. He just doesn't score.
I mean, the puck never goes in the net. But like,
yes, people forget he was a trade acquisition last year. Yeah. So, you know, maybe he'll pop a little bit more now that he's starting a full season. And Stanika was on the first line yesterday, Maz, because Pasternak's not playing.
No, I know that. I'm saying that when they're healthy, in theory, he would bump down.
Sure.
But I think their forward group is half, even their fourth line's okay. Bjork's going to play in the fourth line now, I think. I like Corrali and Wags.
Yeah, so I really like Corrali. And, Nick Ritchie is just, that's a disgrace.
Oh.
But Coyle and Craig Smith, the new guy, like that might, you know, there's something there. That's a legit NHL third line pairing. That's good. That's a good NHL third line pairing.
I'm telling you, get ready for shootouts in the early part of the year with the Bruins. And I don't mean the shootout that comes after overtime. I mean high scoring games.
Well,
because they're going to be able to score, I think. And their D early on might blow.
Well, the Bruins are going to shoot. That I know. They'll shoot. I don't know if it's actually going to cross the line, but
fair.
They'll get a lot of shots.
Fair.
Back with your phones on this and the Celtics right after Murray's update.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Felger and Mass. Way more than just a sports talk radio show.
This truly is the apocalypse.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
All right, here on Felger and Maz, we're mixing in some Bruins thoughts with our hardened conversation. We're bisportial here. Here's Joe and Bill Ricca on the Celts and the cost for Harden. Go ahead, Joe.
I think an underrated talked about part of the Harden for Brown and Smart is Jalen was an elite defender last year, and he has the ability to cover multiple positions. And, you know, Smart was first-team all-defense. Harden's a bad defender. And championship teams always have good defenders as stars.
It is true, and sorry to cut you off there, but I still think the Nets are, I mean, Durant, when he wants to be, is elite, and they have DeAndre Jordan back there as a rim protector. They lose Allen, who I think, again, was a good player and a good piece. How did LeVert play defense? I don't even know, you know. But, I mean, have the Nets lost that much with this trade defensively?
I mean, interior, I'm sorry to cut you off, Maz. I feel like they do because you're going from Allen, who's in his young 20s, and I do know he is good defensively and near the rim. He's a hell of a lot better than DeAndre Jordan, who's, you know, in his early 30s.
I mean, that's a big criticism of them on this deal on the court is that they give him a lot of defense. And so now Durant can play defense, and he's tough to shoot over that whole thing. But they might be able to outscore teams. And also the other thing is, and not to minimize the importance of it, can't you pick that guy up or those guys up? You can pick up defensive players, whether it be, you know, the buyout guys or in a cheap trade. You can get that guy, which is why I think Marcus Smart's overrated. Like, you can find the defensive guy. You can find him.
Brendan in East Boston on the Bruins. Go ahead, Brendan.
Hey, I just wanted to point out, I mean, tonight, obviously, sink or swim defense with the Bruins. Rask is usually pretty shaky early in the season. But with the Bruins drafting, tonight they're going to ice 5 out of their 6 were drafted by the Bruins. All 6 were developed by Boston. Kevin Miller was an undrafted free agent. And from the 2015 draft, 3 of them are going to be playing tonight with Zboril, Carlo, and Lazone.
Okay, well, there you go. I mean, so they, like I said, they've may have picked up something elsewhere, but you can't get. I mean, if you're trying to excuse the Bruins' 2015 draft, saying they hit on other guys, I mean, that doesn't excuse the 2015 draft.
No, please forget it. And again, Zboril, I hold out no hope for him. I think that one's over. And when I say over, I don't know, maybe, and I'm probably wrong about this. Maybe he's a third pairing guy. I think that they regard Lozon more highly, which obviously they put him with McAvoy in the first pairing. And I don't know how many times you pointed out that the two of the, those two guys were the ones that flashed in the junior tournament 3-4 years ago. So, and I remember the Bruins pumping up Lozon at that time. So the Bruins think highly of Lozon.
Lozon's been ahead of Zboril since he got here.
Yes, yes. So that first pairing to me is the one that I'm focused on. Now, again, I'm not telling you that I don't know, maybe Zboril will make it at the end, but I think it's about those first two guys and Carlo.
They screwed the pooch in 15, caller. Not even they would defend themselves. They'd say, we missed it. Sweeney just got the job. They were unprepared. They thought they were packaging those picks for Noah Hanifin, the defenseman, from here. And they thought they had Hanifin in their back pocket. They were ready to, I think it was two of the three first-round picks were going there. Was it Carolina at the time? And the trade blew up at the last minute, and then they were sitting there humming. They weren't ready to make the picks, and they screwed up. They screwed up. And even if they, you know, and then they got unlucky because even if they didn't know what they were doing, if they just went by the central scouting rankings, you know, if they just went according to the effing mock drafts that the people do, you take Barzal there, and they passed on him three straight times. There's no living that down. I'm sorry. Asim in Manchester on the Harden trade. Yes, Asim.
Yes, what's up, guys? So I have two quick points. The first one was obviously about the trading Brown and Smart. Obviously, you don't do that just because of defensively the Celtics won't have anyone. I mean, besides Tatum, who else is going to be, a great perimeter defender besides Semi? And the second point is now with this trade, how many teams in the NBA just basically give up? And we could actually use our trade exception before the end of the trade deadline.
Okay. So the fact that the Nets have built more of a super team means more teams are going to give up on their elite talent and you'll get a steal. Reach. Reach, caller, reach. The first thing he says about the getting too weak defensively. Is that the reason they didn't make the Harden trade is because they were worried that they're going to get too weak defensively, Mess?
No.
Thank you.
No, not even close. No, again, just listen to the conversation that Ainge had with the morning show with Tutcher and Rich when he said, you're talking about a guy who's one of the great scorers in the league and maybe in the history of the league in any era. And I just think that, look, like any basketball guy, I don't think this makes Ainge all that different. He puts a premium on a high-end offensive talent. Those are the guys that can't be guarded at the end of the game. Those are the ones that can get the hard buckets. And those are the guys that oftentimes win championships. Now, you don't want a pure volume scorer guy who's going to take 50 shots to get 30 points because those guys are inefficient. But Harden's better than that. So I think Ainge will always take the offense first.
Long commercial-free segment is next. We'll start to hit on some NHL issues as the Bruins, again, get ready to drop the puck tonight and begin the NHL season. Don't go anywhere.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Ever wonder where Felger and Maz get all their inside information?
I heard from a guy at a cocktail party.
Always relying on their credible sources. Felger and Maz, the show to come to when sports news breaks.
Oh!
What do you think of these new conferences, the way they've been divvied up?
Well, they're interesting. Some old rivalries for us with Philly and the Rangers could develop here. With you're only playing seven teams. That's the thing that didn't kick in at first. Seven teams, that's it. So,
is that a good thing?
I guess it depends. If you ask people that you're going to play a team eight times, then you're going to play, you're in the playoffs, you're going to play them another, possibly seven times. I mean, there's some bad blood, like reminds me of the old Adam divisions years ago, Boston, Montreal, the Quebec, Hartford, all those, there were some good rivalries. So, but you get to see, I guess on TV, you're not watching the Bruins if you want to see Connor McDavid or Braden Point or, those, some of the guys, Matthews, whoever your guy is. I think it's the Canadians.
play-in division. They'll love it up there. That, you know, something they've probably been wanting to see for a long time. So that'll be an interesting thing. I don't know about the Central. Like I said, our division, seeing Crosby 8 times, Ovechkin, I mean, we're going to have our hands full.
All right, some league stuff again. Bruce Cassidy, I'm with Touch and Rich yesterday. Catch the full interview at 985thesportsup.com or the app. It's a good spot. Also, the Ainge interview this morning. So catch both those things. We've been playing sound from both. So that's the number one thing you're going to notice NHL-wise is the realignment, which I like. I think it's a nice change of pace. I think it's cool. Watch Philly and Pittsburgh last night. Those are going to be division rivals this year, and so you're watching different teams, and I like that little mix-up. If we're going to have a 56-game season in pandemic conditions, might as well give me another wrinkle. And so I like this wrinkle. And I think that the Flyers, the Penguins, the Rangers, Capitals, they all have juice. They all have juice in some way, shape, or form, and I'm looking forward to the new matchups. Cassidy's right, though. Boy, are you going to get familiar with these teams. I mean, you can play each of them 8 times, and then the first 2 rounds are in the division. So you could possibly be playing, you know, the Pittsburgh Penguins 15 times and the Washington Capitals 15 times, right? If you play them 8 times in the regular season and then have a 7-game playoff series with them. I mean, that is, woof. You're going to see a lot of these guys. You're going to see a lot of Zdeno Chara, you know, probably.
Yeah, it's a potential for good sports hate, too.
We did a whole segment on this yesterday just before the Harden news broke. If you want to listen to that, you can on the replay. I was going to ask, you know, to open it up to bigger conversations. Do you want any other big, broad realignment in other sports? I mentioned the NBA going 1-16 in the playoffs. I think that'd be interesting. One I meant to bring up was baseball and the old AL-NL. That's what I would. I would scrap interleague play. I'd keep the DH and the NL and, you know, make it again its own separate world, and we'll see in the World Series. I think that was cool. I think we've lost something since they opened up interleague play. I was going to open that up to a bigger conversation yesterday. Maybe that's for tomorrow on Agenda Free, but I just thought I'd mention it. One thing I'll say again, too, is the Canadian division, which Cassie just said there, they are going to love it up there. And I think it's important for the league. I really think it's something they should consider long-term. They've said they won't, but, you know, those national TV contracts up in Canada are really important to the NHL. They do pretty well with the Sportsnet or, you know, CBC, the Hockey Night in Canada. Like, that TV package is a good chunk of change for the league. And do you know that I don't think Canada has had a Stanley Cup finalist since Vancouver in 2011.
Is that right?
Name it. I mean, that's off the top of my head. They have whole years when not a single Canadian team makes the playoffs. And so CBC and the Hockey Night in Canada and these teams and those networks, those national networks, Sportsnet, are broadcasting into Canada. All American, there's not, and believe me, when they get into the playoffs and there's a Canadian team in, they rally around that team. They all rally around, whether it's Calgary or Edmonton or whoever, because Canada wants, they all rooted for the Canucks that year in 2011. Remember, we would play the CBC broadcast and they were real homers for the Canucks. Because it's their team, it's their national broadcast, and, you know, a lot of these years, no Canadian team even sniffs the thing. But the way it's formatted this year is that a Canadian team is guaranteed to be in the Final Four.
Correct.
Because you play off within your division. So this year, that Canadian TV contract is going to be worth something, because no matter what happens, there's going to be at least one Canadian team that gets in the Final Four. And there's a lot of years Canadian teams don't even come close. Am I right? There's been no Canadian team since 11?
So I haven't looked that up, but I'll tell you, it did occur to me, and this happened last night. Toronto and Montreal in the same division is cool.
But they've always, you know, we forget that they have been. They have been.
Well, I guess that's true, yeah. It's just been everyone else with them.
Right. So I don't know. I the Canadian division to me is cool. Like, I like it. And I don't think it's something that they would do long term, but there is value to it. So if you want to weigh in on that, you can. And I felt the same thing. Ooh, Toronto, Montreal, like that really. And then I said to myself, oh,
yeah, that exists, right?
they've actually been together the last 10 years and didn't. But they only played each other 4 times in the old. Now it's 8 times. It might even be 9 because there's only 7 Canadian teams. So, you know, they play each other at least 8, maybe 9 like that. It's going to ramp it up. There's no question about it.
Yeah, and as you said, too, not to mention the nature of the schedule, which, again, I mean, you know, a lot of fans maybe have looked at this. Maybe they haven't. It's literally going to be 2 games at a time with just about everybody all season long. There's only a couple of spots in there where you play one game against a team and then jump. But otherwise, it's the Bruins are two against New Jersey, two against Philly, two against Pitt, two against Washington. There's a game against the Islanders tucked in there. But you're going to be sick of them after 2 days, let alone when you have to play them eight times and then maybe 15 if you see them in the playoffs.
So, Mike, you were right, by the way. It was the Canucks back in 2011.
And the last time before that was Ottawa in 07. There's been only one Canadian team that even made the final in the last, whatever that is, 14 years. So anyway, I mean, there's that. One little thing here that you're going to notice as well. One of the worst replay reviews in all of sports has been eliminated. We've complained about this incessantly. I think it deserves to be complained about incessantly. But that offsides review where the player's toe blade is off the ice. It's still onside. It's still within the plane of the blue line, but it's just off the ice. And that's a no goal. That's been changed. They've changed the rule. You can still replay offsides, but now the players are allowed to take their skate off the ice and have it at least be in the plane, like the plane of the goal line in football, on the plane of the blue line, and that is now onsides. So what was heretofore one of the worst, most ridiculous, nicky-knack, stupid replay decisions in all the sports, gone. Finally. And I was going to open up that to another bigger discussion in other sports and saying, you know, what else, what should be next in the world of sports? Like the pop-up slide in baseball.
Oh, definitely. You got to get rid of that.
Where the second baseman could just slap his glove on the guy's tush. And as he stands up, wait to see if there's a split second where his hand and foot are not on the bag and, ooh, you're out on replay. Like, that's got to go. But at least this is gone in hockey. You know, one that I had in basketball is the replay review for offensive flagrant foul when the guy goes up for a layup with his knee up and he just happens to, clip the guy in the groin because he just has perfect form on the layup with the knee up. And they have to, now we're sitting here around 5 minutes watching the guy knee the other guy in the junk when he's going up for a layup. Like, what are we doing here? Like, there's a million of them.
No more spot foul on pass interference. I would love to see that changed.
Okay,
just make it 15.
I'll tell you what, and this is a total aside, the whole catch thing in the NFL, I feel like that has gotten so much better now. And you know what? There were some over the weekend where I thought they were borderline plays that, like, one, and I don't remember the play now, but there was one where I said, oh, that's a catch. Would you come
Washington,
on?
Washington corner of the end zone.
Yes, that's what it was. That's exactly what it was. And I thought, now, in real time, that's a catch, and they didn't overturn it. And I thought, well, good for them. They got it right.
Yeah, so I was wrong about that. I thought it was going to be a disaster, because they sort of loosened the definition, and I thought that was going to lead to more confusion and more inconsistency. And I was wrong. The change, the emphasis they made 2 or 3 years ago has really helped, and it's there's less of this. I don't know what a catch is anymore, right? I mean, it happens every now and then, but it was really bad there for a while. But in hockey, so the hockey one that is just. Had people saying, why are we doing this, was the offsides replay. That's cool. You can still review replay. I mean, you can still review offsides, but if you lose, it costs you a timeout. They brought that up a couple of years ago. That was added a couple of years ago. And now your skate can be off the ice. It's still got to be behind, in the plane of the blue line, but it can be now off the ice. So between those two things, that's going to eliminate most of the nonsense reviews of that play.
That's a good change. Because, again, that was getting ridiculous. So the guy's skate blade is, again, you could slide a credit card under there, and all of a sudden they're taking away goals when the reality is, oh, what's the difference? He's got one skate over the blue line. He's onside. Just let it go. How can you tell? So that's a good one to get rid of.
Okay, I got one more league thing that we're going to notice on the broadcast. I'll get to it right after Big Jim Murray's 90-second update. There are no commercials here.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.